listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
I think about those glorious summer days of freedom, just wandering around. I remember going hiking out in the hills. I remember this one distinct moment, Chris, where we would have my little sister on my friend's back, and we would basically be climbing like straight down these rocks to get to this watering hole. And years later, I went back and I took my mom with me, and I remember her going, "You guys used to do this a lot?" Yep. And Jacqueline was on the back of Chris, our friend, and she goes, "What?" And she goes, "I just don't want to know."
Yeah, that was the best part of summer, was the getting out and just the freedom of escape. I would take my bike just off into the hills. I remember one time we were out in, back in the hills, and we crossed through this area, kind of been roped off, we didn't know why. And we got kind of like the next hill over, and we heard like air horns, like, whirr, whirr, and then the hill we'd been on exploded. Like they were doing demolition or something. It was the best day ever. I mean, it was so amazing. Good
the
times.
The adventures and the risk, and I think the mystery of what you could discover, I know for me was a fundamental part of my childhood.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the sense of adventure, the conquest of the city, you know. For me, my bike was that my ticket to freedom, you know. Mm-hmm. And I loved finding little back roads and ways that you could get more from one place to another that other people might not know about, or how fast can I go from here to here, you know, and just challenging myself on the hills of North County, San Diego. It was, yeah, oh, best days ever.
There was a piece that came out from the Wall Street Journal talking about how children, American children specifically, are incredibly overprotected today. And it makes you kind of think back and muse on, I know even for me, you know, there's a generation gap between us, in case you didn't know.
A little bit.
But even the level of freedom I had, right, and compared to the level of freedom you, and even, you know, I love hearing the stories of my mom. She had even more freedom and where she went and what she got into. I just think, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Where are children today? They can't even walk across the road.
No, absolutely. You know, I dropped my kids off at middle school yesterday and was just so struck by how much the middle school looks like a prison, you know, and we live in a nice neighborhood. We have a great place. But there's like, you know, the fencing around it, and they have to go through a gate, and they, you know, they're all out in the yard. It looks like prison. This is the context most kids are growing up in. It's just a very constrained, enclosed way to live.
Well, I mean, on one side, especially with all of those school shootings, they're trying to make sure there is one entry point and exit point to keep those campuses safe. But at the same time, you know, you have that question of, are we overly maybe bubble wrapping these kids?
Well, yeah. I remember as a kid going onto the local campuses of my city, like climbing fences to play on the playground equipment, or, you know, I didn't have to climb fences. You just walk on, or, you know, use the fields to play soccer or baseball or whatever. And now those fields aren't available to rec leagues. They have to the city fields, right? And you can't be on the school campus for any reason. Part of me wonders if we haven't made them more of a target by just putting them so outside of life that they stand out now. They're not part of the community anymore. There's these little protected bubbles, you know?
So that's where the creepers go.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? Well, what was interesting to me in this piece, a family psychologist comments in the Wall Street Journal, Brad Sachs, and he talks about how essentially children naturally want that freedom, that independence. And as they grow, though, if we're thwarting that can actually cause issues for them developmentally.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. You know what I mean? Think if you're listening to this, you're probably an adult. That's just demographically speaking, or you're in the car with your parents. But don't you remember that need to just kind of test your wings, right? Mm-hmm. On little things, like whether that was your mom sent you into the grocery store to, like, you know, pick up something like a gallon of milk and bring it back, or you got left to watch your sibling for an hour while your parents did something, or you were allowed to just walk to school by yourself. I mean, all those little milestones are places where you test yourself. And yeah, there are moments where we scraped our knees or we broke our arms or whatever. But you learned that a broken arm doesn't end everything, right? Mm-hmm. You learned that the bloody knee is just part of getting through the day, you know, and it's not going to stop you. And so those little defeats, and sometimes painful defeats, but you learn to overcome those. And so we've taken that away from kids. They don't have to challenge themselves against anything. And so when they do scrape their knee or they do face defeat, they crumple.
Or even fighting, you know, when kids fight in school. I remember, you know, for a brief period of time, I was in the public school system. I remember two of the girls got into a slapping fight. A bunch of the boys were beating each other up. It's just this rough and tumble type of thing that would happen. Everyone laughs. It's a big deal. But essentially now, sometimes I think intervention takes place too quickly, right?
Yeah.
Preventing that from working itself out, realizing, oh, there are actually consequences if I hit someone too hard, right?
Well, and I think we've intervened so much at younger ages that we've taken away the problem-solving skills, right? Mm-hmm. So kindergartners might have gotten a little pushing match or and they would have worked it out and they would have realized that's not a very good strategy. We've taken that away from them, so they get to middle school and no one's learned that, so they now think this is a possible strategy, and so it just breaks out all the time. And you know, my kids will tell me all the time, oh yeah, we had another fight today. And it's oddly enough, it's more often girls than guys who are getting into these fights at their school, at least.
It's not just safe spaces people need on college campuses, universities, but these little kindergartners have to have these bubbles of don't touch them, don't invade their space.
I've talked about this on the show before. I asked my kid if he played tag at school, and he said, Dad, we're not allowed to touch. Right? Like, and so it's so safe, you can't play tag. I mean, what is that doing to a generation where they can't? Because when you play tag, you learn how hard to push, right? You can't push too hard, you knock a person down. Well, they never learned that now. So that we've taken that element of play out.
Well, and think about the more sensitive kids. So you have on one side, kids don't learn how hard they can or cannot push. On the other side, kids don't get pushed around. So then when they do later on in life, not just physically, but emotionally, psychologically, now they're the victim. They're complaining. They're upset. They can't handle any type of pressure on them.
Right, exactly. And so we haven't learned how to overcome,
mm-hmm.
right? And you haven't learned that, you know, the reality of life is everybody has a bad day, right? Everybody has a bad day. And most people will have a bad season from time to time. But if you've never learned how to overcome a bad day or a bad season, then it's very easy to go, well, I'm a victim. Everybody hates me. My life is terrible. And I'm gonna take it out on the rest of those people rather than how can I improve my situation?
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmery Millington. You are listening to Trending. We're talking about how young children, especially American children, are overprotected and what that's leading to. A little later on in the show, we're going to talk about millennials and the difference between millennials and that new Gen Z, also known as the iGen, coming right on up behind the millennials. But what's interesting is, so these kids today lacks a lot of basic social skills, self-preservation skills, and also impulse control. What can we do? You know, just being practical. Maybe you guys have children. Maybe you have, you know, nieces and nephews that you're watching over the summer, or even siblings. How can you help them in establishing their independence?
Yeah, I know for us, you know, and I've got six kids. I've mentioned that before. We're trying, like, to find strategies to give control of their lives back to our children, right? So my middle school student, we've given him control over his grades, basically saying, we want you to do well, but it's not important that you get A pluses. We just want you to get mastery over it. Mom's open to help you with math until 6 o'clock because mom has to be the one to help with math because dad can't do it. But it's the same thing. We've made it a point that we go on a date once a week for our relationship. We know that that's important. However, we've also said to the kids, you're part of that. Now you're taking care of each other. So the 13-year-old and the 11-year-old are now watching the younger siblings when we go out.
Hold on a second, though. People are probably aghast for a moment here just hearing that you leave your six children alone with a 13-year-old in charge.
Well, we do take the baby. So the infant comes with us, right? Because he's right with mom. But yeah, I mean, the 2-year-old goes to bed. And so if he wakes up, whatever, not like we don't all have cell phones. They can't call us, or they can't, you know, call my brother who lives in town, or they can't call 911 in case of an emergency. And we're doing the steps like getting them CPR training and those things. But we're giving them that responsibility. Yeah. Absolutely.
There's a story that we were reading from a mom who left her child alone at home one day because she had no option. I think the kid was like, was it 8 years old? I think
9 is what she said in the story. Yeah.
Yeah. And so basically the kid's left at home because the husband's away on a business trip. The mom needs to get some medicine from the pharmacy and the kid is homesick. And she's panicking about leaving her kid home. And she said it's not even a 5-minute walk to the store.
Right.
She teaches the kid how to use that one thing that a lot of kids don't even know about. exist a landline because they have one. She said we had to track it down, made sure she knew the right numbers, quizzed her on the numbers, and then ran out for what I'm guessing was maybe a 15-minute trip to the store. And man, Chris, you look at it and she recognizes I was too scared. This was, in some ways, she says this was bad because even though it went well, how worried I was too big of a deal.
Right. And it's funny, I think the cell phone culture kind of contributes to that, right? You know, we used to leave our homes and no one could get in touch with us. And we just realized life goes on. And now we, oh my gosh, we have to be constantly in contact the entire time. And oh, my precious baby. And you know, what's a 9-year-old going to do if you leave them at home by themselves?
Right.
Watch TV. You know what I mean? Or, you know, put in a DVD, go to the store and they're going to watch. They're probably not going to leave the couch, right? And even if they do, like my 9-year-old, we have a 3rd grader. She's 9. She's probably the most capable child we have at home. Right. She's the one who, you know, we leave the phone with her when we leave all of the kids alone. She's got the phone. Right. Because she's also the informant. Let's be honest. And so we want to keep track of that.
You mean the tattletale
there? Well, I like to think more of informant. I, you know, there's a strategy to this.
Is this the one that monitors the iPad where all the family texts go to?
Absolutely. Yes. She is absolutely the one who is plugged in. But she's also the kid that she knows everybody's name. She's just really plugged into what's happening around her. So yeah.
Reminds me a little bit of my little sister. Some people call her Gabby Knows Best.
Yeah.
She knows best. She knows everything. She is always correct. Coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about millennials. We're talking also about some of the mass shootings we've seen over the past year and how we can look at different changes we can make and maybe a little bit about what's going on.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
So we're talking about how basically American kids today are bubble wrapped. Wall Street Journal had this great piece that came out. Following up on that story, Chris, one of the things I wanted to talk about is how in Long Island, the superintendent of the school was kind of looking at how, and he specifically talks about the kids being bubble wrapped,
right?
How he wanted to change this. And so what he did essentially is he worked with the teachers in that school district to make sure that at least one day a week, the kids didn't have homework. And instead they were challenged to try something new, whether it was going and playing tag outside at night, whether it was doing, you know, something adventurous.
Right.
And so what happened is they actually saw an increase in test scores in that school district and an increase in the kids interacting in the classroom, raising their hands and talking.
Right. I absolutely believe that. You know, you look at the experience of most young boys, they live their lives trying not to get in trouble because they're just, everything is so structured around them. Right. And so to give them one night where you say, you know what, tonight's your night to do whatever. It seems crazy that we now have to build into the life of children one free night. Right.
I'm thinking Ferris Bueller's Day Off right now.
Oh, yeah.
In the back of my mind. Grant, he did ditch school. But I mean, kids have a more difficult time even ditching school today.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. But you think about it, like I talk to like to high school students, right? And they are regularly, my high school students are doing homework until 11 or 12 o'clock at night. And then they're getting up at 6 to be at school by 7, right? Mm-hmm. And so what are we training them in? Are we training them to have healthy lives later? No, we're basically giving them an education in being a workaholic, how to neglect your spouse, you know, is what we're teaching them. And so, yeah, you know, it's crazy to think that like the high school is for a lot of our students, one of the most stressful times in their lives. When, you know, that should be high school, right? It should be like you're kind of learning about interaction and you're getting the skills to succeed in college and life and all that stuff. But come on, at a point it just becomes excessive.
Well, essentially, high school is meant to help them learn responsibility. That's part of the purpose of all the homework. Although now I hear these teachers, because I have a lot of teachers I teach in Pilates, and they're always talking about that bridge between middle school and elementary school and how, well, we want to give more homework because we want them to not be totally shocked, right?
Right.
With the change. But if they're trying to learn good skills, responsibility, we're setting them up for failure when, just like you said, they don't even have enough time to get 8 hours of sleep.
Right, exactly. You know, and it's funny because as a parent, it's so easy to buy into all of that, like, oh, well, they have to be in the AP classes, or they have to be an international baccalaureate, or they have to be in this. And the reality is they don't. I mean, they really don't have to be in all those things. Like, why would, like, international baccalaureate, for instance, that's to prepare students to go to international universities. The reality is most of our students are not going to go to international universities. Oh, but they get higher ranking. Yeah, but the reality is, like, the college you go to, it's important, but it's really not that important, because once you get your first job, most people never look at the college you went to again, right?
Exactly.
Right, but we put all the stress, this excess of pressure on these kids, and we don't ever stop to go, does this make any sense?
Right, and I think that that's the challenge for so many of the kids, is they don't have a clear reason for what they're doing. So instead, the reason has become get to college, rather than the reason should be, are you a good person? Do you know how to get grades that are good, right, for who you are, what your skill level is? Are you learning to maybe get a job in the summer? That's something I remember last year on Trending, we talked a lot about how kids today just don't have summer jobs.
Well, and when they get their jobs is getting further and further out, right? Now we're seeing that most students don't even get jobs until their senior year, where it used to be you got a job, you know, 15 and a half, you could get your work permit, and most kids got a job at that point, right? And now it gets pushed back and gets pushed back, gets pushed back.
Well, and I've even seen, you know, I remember in college, a lot of those people were not getting jobs until after college. And I mean, God bless them, the opportunity to not have to have a job necessarily in college and just be able to focus. But I know for me, I always learned to appreciate the fact that when I have more to do, I have more that I have to prioritize, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And so it, for me, it kept me responsible. It kept me also invested in my college education. But I then saw some of those people leave college struggling to get a job. And part of that was because they never had any work experience. They never had to balance everything of what time do I go to the grocery store?
Right. I know for me, my most productive seasons are my busiest seasons, right? Mm-hmm. And so when, you know, and this is kind of counter to what we're saying with kids, but like our students are so focused on these academic kind of hoops they're jumping through that they don't get a job. They don't learn that work-life balance kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so everything becomes about just kind of checking off the next box. And you don't realize that work at McDonald's, your first job, or whatever your first schmo job is, the schmo job is very important, because the schmo job teaches you, I don't want to work in a schmo job for the rest of my life. Does that make sense? Like that first part-time job, right. that should be a part-time job, right? It's something you realize, you know, I don't like it when someone changes my schedule every week. I'd like to have a job that's 9 to 5, so I know where I'm going to be every week, you know? And that's an important lesson.
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmy Millington. I'm thinking about all the stories of friends, extended family members, kids I know today where they've maybe tried to have that first job. And a lot of it, I have to say, isn't even in high school. It's in college, right?
Sure.
And they're suddenly out there having to wait on tables, and they do not like that. It grosses them out. So they quit within the first week or so. Or, you know, someone who's now having to push the shopping carts at the grocery store, and they quit after the first couple days. It's too much work. And I mean, in some circumstances, you get it. You understand. The hope, though, is that that's pushing you to work on things so that you can do something else, right? And not just giving up. But I feel like a lot of kids today go, I don't like this. I'm just not going to do it. Done.
Right. Yeah. And that's a terrible lesson. I don't like it. I'm just not going to do it. You know, there's something that we need to learn. You know, I think there's something very important about learning that, you know what? I don't like pushing shopping carts, but if it's how I'm going to support myself or my family, then I'll push those shopping carts and I'll be the best shopping cart pusher, and then I'm going to move up to a different position. And we're not teaching kids that resilience of how to move through things. You know, it's, again, it all goes back to this kind of classroom checking off boxes, you know, getting your resume prepared for college, but we're not really preparing them for life. Right. And I know for me, like, we've been guilty of this, like, we of being the parents who are going to make sure our kid gets the A's, right? And not letting them fail because they just screwed around. And, you know, there's a lesson to failing. You learn, you fail, and your life starts closing in on you, and you realize, I don't like failing. I don't like this feeling. And so you take personal responsibility. But when your parents keep pushing you, helicoptering you, pushing you, pushing you, what you learn is to fight your parents. And that you're not learning the skills to succeed.
Later on in the show, we're going to be talking about boredom and how it's good for us, not just kids, but also ourselves. You know, just some ideas for any teachers, parents, preschool, and any type of educator. You know, remember, challenge the kids to do things like unrestricted play. Don't always give them something to do. And challenge them to do things like playing night tag or flashlight tag in the house. And yeah, they might bang things around and make mistakes, but that's part of being a kid. You know, exploring the woods, walking the dog, not being afraid. afraid to have your kid walk the dog, you
know? Absolutely. Yeah.
So just some ideas. I want to shift gears here a little bit to talk about the differences between millennials and Gen Z. You know, there's a lot coming out from Forbes and Business Insider about, you know, here's your future workforce, right? Some of them are already entering in. So the millennials generally are cut off at those entering adulthood in the early 2000s, right? And basically, Gen Z, also known as the iGen, are the kids who were born between 1995 and 2010. So that's who we're talking about here. Some right. of those are just starting their first jobs out of college.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I'm at that age where I'm like, hey, all a bunch of millennials. You know, they all look the same to me. Because when you get to a certain age, you're like, they're all young. Everybody's young. They've got no wrinkles. They disgust me. you know, but it's true. There is a definite difference between your millennials. And I think the way we can kind of characterize this is millennials got their iPhones when iPhones were coming out, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And Gen Z grew up in a world where they probably had a tablet in their hands, you know, when they're five. And so they've had this kind of connected world their entire lives. They don't have any idea of a world without smartphones. They can't even remember it.
These right? are the kids who I was always amazed their cute little fingers could fly around those iPad touch screens. I'm going, I don't even know how to work it that quickly. Their interaction with the screen was so implied right away. I don't know. I remember just always being amazed because, you know, in some of the conversation, millennials in comparison actually have a harder time understanding technology the way today's teenager does.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like a millennial grew up in a house that probably had a newspaper delivered to it, right? Mm-hmm. A Gen Z probably hasn't actually seen a print newspaper.
And I was seeing in Wall Street Journal and Forbes talked about how this was because they grew up during the recession.
Right.
And, you know, you think back on the recession and I know, you know, it had a huge impact on a lot of people, but maybe we too quickly look over the fact that these kids actually saw a little bit more of maybe marital strife within the home
totally.
At that time. They saw a depletion in finances that maybe changed what people were willing to do with not going on vacations, not going to the movie theaters.
Well, you know, I know for me, the house I grew up in has a special place in my psyche. You know, like when I dream, a lot of times it'll be in that childhood home, the room mm-hmm. I had, right?
Right.
These kids lost their childhood homes to foreclosure and short sale.
Right.
How much of an impact does that have on your worldview when that place of security, in a lot of respects, they saw their parents struggle with that and the fights that came out of it or just the angst or maybe they lived in one of those homes where their parents just let it fall apart around them because they knew the bank was taking it. And so, yeah, that need for, you know, economic security really comes into play.
And that's so different, as you pointed out, versus the purpose of the millennials, where millennials, I think, maybe had their ego stroked for too long. And so not only do they think they deserve the job they want, but they also think, you know, they're wonderful in the midst of it. And then they also only want the job that they want to fulfill them, versus we're actually seeing some of the Gen Z are opting out of college university settings, going maybe more so into trade or right into the workforce.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not about fulfillment. It's about getting the job and getting started. And I think that's a really positive trait, or it can be.
That's something we'll come back talking a little bit more about millennials and Gen Z. And don't miss out. We're going to be talking about boredom and how it's good for you a little later on in the show.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So if you're like me, you tend to think that anyone under 30 is a millennial, but it's not true. We actually have some differences between our millennials and now what we're calling Gen Z. And these Gen Zs are those kids that grew up with the iPhone. They grew up with the iPad in their hands, with the connected generation. And they're quite different than our millennial generation.
I think it's fascinating to see the differences. And again, I was mentioning before, I'm a millennial. My three younger siblings are Gen Z. And I actually see some of these differences. One of them, it talks about how millennials are more collaborative. And I think this is one of those moments where I just cannot stand the open workspaces. It's distracting to me and annoying versus the Gen Z really identify with independence. They're less likely to want to have that that collaborative element. And a lot of them, like we said before the break, want to enter right into the workforce.
Now, I have to say, as a Generation X myself, I feel cynical about this whole thing. However, it is interesting to me that they are so that Gen Z is competitive. I mean, they don't want to do a group project. I mean, does anybody really ever want to do a group project?
No.
Ever? But I love it because Gen Z really hates it. And so there's part of me as a Gen X who goes, I think they're my people. I think I understand people. Them.
Right. And you know what's funny is I was just talking about this with my little brother because they had a bunch of end of the year school projects and how challenging it is. And I think you really begin to see the leaders and the followers come out when you have collaborative school projects. Mm-hmm. The people who won't do anything, the person who kind of takes charge and tells everyone, well, this is what you're doing, this is what you're doing, and kind of are assigning those tasks. It's so interesting to see who's going to let the team down and who's going to step up to the plate.
You know what's interesting is studies have shown that in a group project, people tend to work 70% as hard as they would if it was an individual project.
It's kind of like group texting. I feel like no one ever responds.
Right. Yeah. Because somebody else will. Right. And so you immediately go from an A effort to a C effort when it becomes a group, because you just depend on everybody else to kind of make up the difference. So, uh-huh. I mean, so in that respect, if you're looking for an employee, Gen Z might be the one you want because they want 100% of responsibility. They want to work and they want to get it done. Problem with that is they may not have the wisdom to know how to do that at this point. So they might be a little bit hard to work with.
Well, throwing this in there, they may not have the wisdom, but they think that they do. Humility is not a characteristic of this generation because they grew up on the iPad, on anything they possibly needed to quickly hop on and research any fact. So while we think millennials are annoying fact checkers, so could Gen Z.
Right. Now, the problem is, and this is, I think it's a problem for a lot of our society right now, is Gen Z tends to be rapid multitaskers, right? And so they'll be working on the computer, they've got multi-tabs open, they're checking their phone, they're checking their stuff, they're going back and forth. And the issue with that is, and if you're listening, check yourself too, as human beings, we don't multitask. We task switch. And every time you change from one thing to the next, you're firing off different, you know, different neurons, right? And you're changing the neural net, like, and you actually have to change processes. You can't do both at one time.
See, and that's what was interesting to me, Chris. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmy Millington. You're listening to Trending. What was interesting about this quote-unquote great multitasking element of Gen Z, no one can multitask like this. And I remember when I was younger, there was a period of time where people would say, oh, you can do everything at once. You can make it happen. Well, neuroscientists make it very clear you can't. So while Gen Z is being praised for their capability of watching TV, doing homework, texting their friend at the same time, they may be in some ways appearing to succeed, but they're going to burn out. They can't continue to work at that level, and they're not necessarily doing everything well.
Right. No, and studies have shown that it takes you about 12 minutes to get refocused every time you change tasks, right? So say you're working on a paper or a white paper for work or spreadsheet or whatever, and then you go to check your Twitter and you're on that for 3 minutes. Then you go back to your computer. Well, it might look like you multitask effectively, but you're not, because even though you're working on what you were working on before, you're not as focused on it as you were before. The resources haven't been reallocated in your mind.
This is such a challenge for me sometimes because I actually work from home part of the time. And so there's that distraction. And I think a lot of people have this. Well, I could do laundry at the same time. I could cook at the same time.
Right.
I could maybe take the whole morning getting ready a little bit at a time as I'm doing this prep for the radio show, working on this conference schedule, like throwing all these different things in. But in reality, if we block our time, and we've talked a lot about this on Trending,
of absolutely
focusing, organizing, if we can block our time and focus on one task at a time, not only are we going to feel more accomplished, we're going to have a better pleasure reward system, but we're going to feel better about taking that time to stop.
Oh, absolutely. And so if you're raising a Gen Z kid right now, or maybe you have a young Gen Z employee that you want to invest in, you might introduce them to something like the Pomodoro method, right? Where you're going to take these blocks of time with little reward breaks. We talked about it in the show a while back, and I've been implementing it in my own life. And I got to tell you, I'm getting all kinds of stuff done and I'm loving it, right? And so that might be something to look into with your Gen Z students or your Gen Z employees.
And we'll talk about some of the practical side of this on the next segment, because we're going to talk about boredom and one of of the challenges that came out with one woman who challenged her listener base to actually stop using their phone as much as they were. And it's something I did this past Lent with a lot of our listeners. I challenge you guys to the black and white challenge. And it doesn't have to be Lent. You can do that right now. But that's where essentially you changed your phone to all black and white, worked on not having in your hand, you know, resisting that itching feeling to pick it up. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. You know, just a couple other characteristics of this generation. They're more entrepreneurially oriented and less entitled than the millennials. And I think that's important to remember that these kids want to take ownership of the projects they're going to work on.
Absolutely. But again, and this is kind of the last point in this Forbes article, but they also want to be catered to. Right. And I think as church, we need to hear that, too. And this is one of the things I think, you know, and I've worked in church for 18 years. I think we've at times in our methods, as far as formation is concerned, we've missed some of these generational bumps. Right. You look at Gen X, for instance, if you want to characterize Gen X, we are super invested in our kids. We are the helicopter parents. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, then how do you want to attract Gen X adults? By investing in the millennial kids and Gen Z kids. If you're looking at Gen Z wants to be catered to, then you got to look at your formation programs and say, well, gosh, how can we maybe break this up so that we're not saying this is a one size fits all program, but we're saying, all right, well, how can we help you to find a program that fits for you? How can we do that in a way that works for the parish, but also works for you? So the important thing is that you're learning the material and that you're also developing that relationship with God, and the hoops of our program aren't as important, right? It's kind of the everybody gets special treatment model of parish formation. What a great, you know, what a more effective way to reach Gen Z.
Well, isn't that fundamental? It becomes more personal.
Absolutely.
And this is actually something that Gen Z is craving. They're craving more of that face-to-face interaction because they've seen what's happened with millennials. They were given the opportunity to just text and just email, and Gen Z has seen that sometimes flop for some of the millennials.
Right. So if you're doing confirmation prep with adolescents right now, and these are Gen Z kids, then rather than doing a letter to the pastor requesting confirmation, probably you need to move to that model of an interview, right? And we're going to bring every student in. We're going to touch base with them at the beginning of the year. And we're going to touch base with them at the end of the year, right? And so we're developing a personal relationship, which is what they're craving. And so we're kind of creating that relationship between the student and the church that way too. We're using something that's a characteristic of their generation, and we're saying, how can we put that in service of the church?
It's important that we're loving these kids where they are. If they are desiring face-to-face time, they're desiring to be catered to. If they are the most tech-savvy generation, that means they're in need of personal contact. And so that's part of what that face-to-face contact, I love the example of, instead of a letter to the bishop, right, a letter mm-hmm. to the priest, you know, meeting, taking that time one-on-one, even, you know, as a form of testing as well. Maybe, you know, I know people in school, and we actually had this as an option. If you wanted to do oral exams instead of written, that was an option.
Right.
And for some, that's something I actually saw Gen Z choosing more in the university setting when I was working there at the university still, that they wanted more of that oral exam opportunity.
You know, and I think an important point to make too is Gen Z, I think sometimes it's easy as a Generation X or a baby boomer to look at younger generations and go, oh, well, these kids need to do this or they need to do that. The reality is they didn't choose this. This is the context in which they were born into, right? A Gen Z kid didn't choose to be born into the iPad revolution. A Gen Z kid didn't choose to be born into the Great Recession. The kind of characteristics that they're exhibiting, it wasn't a choice. It's just part of who they are. It's part of how they were brought up. And so, yeah, we want to teach them how to work in a multi-generational context, but we can't just go, well, they need to change and they need to do that. We have to say, no, if I really truly desire to bring the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ to this generation, then I need to seek to do that in a language that they'll understand. I need to understand their context a little bit better.
Well, so let's wrap this idea up, right? We started the show talking about how kids are bubble wrapped today, right?
Yeah.
And then we've moved on to Gen Z and how, you know, what are the characteristics of them? They desire competition, right? They're more competitive. They're more individualistic, right? They like to work individually. For the sake of the gospel, for the sake of raising kids, raising individuals who are extraordinary human beings, it's important we are actually looking at characteristics of each generation to best cater to them. And that's why we're talking about this today.
Right. Absolutely. You know, and again, as a parent or someone involved in formation at a parish level, it's saying, okay, here's the weaknesses of this generation. How can we step into that? Here are the strengths of this generation. How can we harness that? And you know, here are the interests of this generation. How can we appeal to that? Right. And really it's St. Paul. I'll be all, you know, all things to all people. right? Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's interesting because if you look at some of the studies that have come out, and you'll hear this, you know, a couple shows back, we talked about how kids are dating less than they were. They're having less sex and they're drinking less alcohol earlier on than they used to be.
Yeah, which is a trend that I think most people my age would go, no, that can't be possible. I've watched television, right?
You know, but part of the reason for this is the massive exposure to pornography. And so while, again, we're talking about the positive side of the tech being an option, the downside is the kids are messing up their pleasure reward systems in many ways because of the dopamine, that the serotonin, all the chemicals that are being released in their body, giving them a sense of euphoria, serenity, pleasure, happiness, pain tolerance. These are things they're getting from the overexposure of receiving that text message because you get a little bit of dopamine. Right? Looking at that pornographic image, this is some of the face-to-face contact that they're missing because they think they're being satisfied by it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that, you know, we have to understand that these, they have the same, just because their generational characteristics are such, it doesn't mean they don't have the same innate desires, the same needs that we, that all generations have had. Hey, we're going to be talking a little bit more about this as we continue on the show, and then also taking a look at the, this kind of mass shooting phenomenon that's happening, what might be causing. We'll be right back.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
So we've been talking about Gen Z and some strategies to reach Gen Z with the gospel and how we as parents, as educators, as church people, we can share the good news. And I made the point that Gen Z didn't choose to grow up in the context they've grown up in, right? This is just the world that they grew in and how they've adapted to it. And I think one of the things that's happened in the life of Gen Z is this idea of mass shootings. We can't deny it. It's something that's happening in the United States and it's horrific. And I think we need to get, as a people, we need to ask hard questions about why. We can have the guns debate, or we can have the you know, this debate, or we can have that, but what's the why, right? I don't know the weapon is, but what's the why?
And this is what we like to touch on Trending, getting down to the fundamental element of human anthropology, what's going on with us. And so a really fantastic article that came out of the National Review was basically about why do mass shootings happen? And what they came out to talk about is how social pressure is really driving a lot of the violent interaction that we're seeing. And essentially, we as human beings have a threshold level. So if you think about it like this, there's one kid who's maybe willing to throw a rock through a window, right? And then there's another kid who's not willing to do it unless they see someone else doing it with them, right? And then it's a matter of how far does that threshold go? How many people have to throw a rock through the window until you too will join in or do it on your own? So it's not just you pioneering, leading the movement, but you're willing to jump on the bandwagon.
Right. And so and Malcolm Gladwell writes about this. And if you haven't read Malcolm Gladwell's work, he does some really great stuff.
We'll be sure to tweet it out.
Yeah. He's got a book called Outliers that changed my perspective on a lot of stuff with child rearing and amazing. But anyway, he talks about this. Essentially, what we have here is a slow riot, right? We're slowly, the threshold is being changed. And so that what was once unthinkable isn't anymore. Just like in a riot, you see one person throw a rock through a window and most of them go, that's unthinkable. But if you see 5-10 people throwing rocks through windows, there's a certain amount of the population that will go, oh, okay, fine. And if 100 people are throwing rocks through windows and rioting, then somebody who may never have broken the law before says, you know what, I'm just going to grab that camera. And you know, all of a sudden he's a looter and he might have been the most law and order person in the world, but he got caught up in the mob mentality.
Well, and that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing these kids who appear so normal. Yeah, they had, you know, a broken home life. But, you know, maybe they did okay in school. Maybe right. They were the socially awkward kid that didn't talk a lot, but do we really think they were that bad of a kid that we fully suspected this? Now, Grant, I know we're not getting into all the elements of the warning videos and the social media posts that were major signs, but still you're seeing a lot of people going, that kid did that?
Right, but you look at the warning videos and all those things, and it becomes formulaic. They're not random. They're not happening kind of in a vacuum. It's like, no, Columbine happened. It changed everything. And now people are kind of joining the movement of Columbine. That's when it gets really frightening.
What was really interesting was over the period of 1999 to 2007, there were 11 non-U.S. high school shootings, essentially. And 6 of the 11 of them actually basically followed a rubric imitating Columbine. So you're seeing, even in the latest Texas shooting, these kids are imitating these shootings that they're able to research and hear about. And it's like almost in some ways their moment of fame, their moment of role playing. There's so much to it.
No, absolutely. And it, you know, the scary thing about the slow riot thesis that Gladwell puts out is that, you know, in any sort of like context, like when this begins, the first person usually has to have like this massive grievance, like this really, this is why it's happened. I've been bullied my whole life, or whatever it is. But as the riot spreads, the reasoning doesn't have to be as massive. What was unthinkable has now become thinkable. And so the powerful grievances aren't necessarily as necessary. And so this last one in Texas, we see that they mostly have attributed it to a girl rebuked him. Well, that's such a small, like for most of us, we go, well, that was Tuesday for me, right? You know, like when I was that age, if a girl I didn't like or a girl I liked didn't like me, it wasn't like a life-changing event. It was just Tuesday, right? For most of us. But in this low threshold, now this becomes, oh, well, I'm going to get back at everybody because you're in the movement of this riot.
Right. And this is why there is an issue with shows like 13 Reasons Why. I remember, and my listeners will remember me talking through this because we talked a lot about 13 Reasons Why. That's a Netflix show that basically the girl documented the reasons why she committed suicide. They graphically showed it. And basically she's pointing the finger, blaming a different person each episode. And I had people writing into me justifying, well, it was great artistically and it told a sad story. And I was just shocked by how many people of faith, how willing we are to justify the things we watch. And not only that, so here, at what point does it not become a big deal? Now there's no major reason sometimes for these shootings. Same thing with abortion. It used to be, oh, well, you know, there are extreme circumstances where I have to have this abortion for medical reasons. Now it's elective abortions are the vast majority of abortions that take place. 99% of abortions are for any reason. It could be, I want to fit into my dress at prom coming up in, you know, the summer. It could be a number of things.
Right. You know, it's we've talked about desensitization over the years, right? And I think it's very hard to argue against desensitization. It changes the way we think. We've become mm-hmm. desensitized. And you look at games like, you know, Grand Theft Auto, right? You look at how we've trained shooters essentially over the years with video games, or and then you take these the way we kind of, I don't want to say, you know, glorify, but you look at, like, we show the pictures of these people, right, online. We make them out to be these cult icons, in a sense. And you'll see that, I can't remember which shooter it was, but he had, like, he'd followed and kind of looked at this other guy as a hero who'd been a previous shooter. I want to say it was the Florida shooter. He'd kind of idolized him, right? And it's just, we're creating a movement. And I think that's the thing we have to stop and say, how can we stop creating a movement?
At the heart of this, just hearing the fact that it's your everyday kid anymore who's maybe upset over a breakup or whatever it might be, it points to Generation Z that we've been talking a lot about, and how essentially, because there's so much tech, because these kids aren't having as many face-to-face interactions, relationships, longevity-wise, dating, all of these elements, they're further and further removed from it, Chris. What's happening is you're seeing these kids don't know how to process their emotions. And this really stood out to me in this last piece I want to talk about, and that is how boredom is good for you. A podcaster and author, Manoush Zomorodi, actually talks about this in her book, where she essentially had ended up challenging her listeners on her radio show and podcast to take this challenge of removing themselves from how much they use their phone. You know, on average, the average person is going to use Facebook for at least 2 years of their life. We pick up our phone hundreds of times throughout the day just to check it. Our hand is itching. And one of the things that came out in this challenge that she posed for a week long to her listeners, and each day there was a different thing, like delete that app that's pulling away a lot of your time. Work on not grasping for your phone. What happened, Chris, was interesting. One of the comments she made, especially for young people, they didn't know how to process emotions they hadn't had before.
Yeah, I love that. They're just like, I don't know what I'm feeling. You know, that's boredom. Right.
That's boredom.
But I loved this. It was the TED talk that she did because I found myself guilty. Mm-hmm. Right. The idea of I used to read, you know, and I've just stopped reading. You know, you'd used to be in line at the grocery store and you just look around, you know, you just right. Oh, look, lift your head up. But now you're immediately in the phone checking, you know, nothing. Nothing. You know, just throwing the time away. And, you know, what scientists will tell us is that when you're bored, it lights up a whole different neural network in your brain, right? Kind of the default mode. And that's an important process that we need to go into. And we've essentially taken it out of our experience.
You know, it helps us with that life mapping, right? The goal-oriented part of our brain and kind of working things out and just having that downtime. And she talks about, you know, and she really realized this when she had an infant born at the same time as iPhone came out, and how basically she was bored out of her mind. She came from this incredible career, and while she loved her child, she's going on walks, she's folding laundry, she ended up realizing that as she bought her iPhone eventually, she was less happy in many ways when she had her iPhone than she was bored walking the baby, folding the laundry.
Right. And she made a point, it was less creative. So we have one child who was a little bit speech delayed, and he ended up going to speech therapy, and now he won't stop talking. But he at one point was speech delayed. And it really struck me that was the kid who was born at the advent of the smartphones. Mm. And I can't tell you if or not or what, but was that because we were less interactive with him, or was it just because every kid's different? I don't know, but it's made me really rethink of, you know, how I'm using this. And when we are going for a walk with the kids, are we, you know, hey, how you doing? Talking to the child, do that, or we're playing in the ground, I have my phone in my hand. I want my kids to know me without my phone in my hand.
So for me, this is something I've really tried to work on over the years with my phone. I remember when I was in college, I ditched all of the social media apps from off of my phone. I made sure that I had little warnings on my computer that would prevent me from spending more than 5 to 10 minutes on certain websites, essentially, right?
Right.
I've never been a YouTuber. Thank God I've never had that issue of getting stuck on there. But Facebook, right, is when you could just be devoured by Twitter. I don't need those warning signs and shutting down of the programs anymore. But for a while, I did, because I personally didn't have the ability to shut them down. So Grant, for me personally, it's been about 8 years since I've really struggled with the social media drawing in. It's been a while since I've really like sat there and constantly been the person to text. But I can tell you that it took a lot of practice to get to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I am the person who needs it shut off. I love the point about Gen Z wanting face-to-face time. Mm-hmm. So this Sunday, if you're at church and you're thinking about that and you see a young person, go give them some face-to-face time. Reach out to them and say, hey, you know, how are you doing? What's going on in your life? And maybe break from your generation to that generation.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.